In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, I'm going to be talking to Noah Kagan about blue tick marketing tactics. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 353. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products. Whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it, I'm Mike. You got to say, and I'm Noah.
I didn't know you wanted me to go. What's up, man? And I'm Noah.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's going on this week, Noah?
This week, I'm doing marketing. So that's kind of what I've been thinking about with our sumo.com business. Just who's the customer, where are they, and then what kind of plan can we put in place to help reach out to them?
Awesome. So for the listener who may not be familiar with Noah Kagan, he is the founder of AppSumo and Sumo.com. They offer a variety of free tools for small businesses. You put a little JavaScript snippet on your website, and essentially you end up with a suite of tools that helps you build your email list, promote it, get people into your sales funnel, and really just kind of manage a lot of the online marketing that you do. Is that kind of an accurate ballpark assessment of that?
Yeah, our whole company, other purposes, we help the small dudes or the little guys become sumos. So we have two businesses. One's AppSumo.com, which is a Groupon for geeks, and Sumo.com, which is the tools for people to be able to promote themselves, mostly around growing their mailing list and growing their customer base.
Awesome. So today we were going to kind of dive into Blue Tick, and I just launched it a couple of days ago. I think this episode will actually go out probably a week or two later, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about it just because you've got a knack for all things marketing, to be perfectly honest. You've done a lot of different work at some very high profile companies like Mint and Facebook, especially in the early days of those companies. So wanted to talk to you a little bit about if you were running Blue Tick based on kind of where it is today, what would you do and how would you approach things moving forward, and kind of take that and not only just, you know, for my own selfish purposes to kind of use that moving forward, but also to illustrate to the listener what sorts of things are possible and what sorts of things they should be looking at when they're trying to get their product out the door and right after they launch.
Totally. One thing, Mike, I think, I don't know how much you've shared with your audience on the podcast, but maybe you want to give a little bit of a background for possibly new listeners or people who haven't heard about Blue Tick yet.
Sure. So Blue Tick is a warm and cold email follow-up tool. And the basic idea is that if there are certain points in your sales funnel that you know where you typically have to reach out to somebody more than once to get them to do something, whether that's to reply or to fill out a form or to submit information, something along those lines, then you put them into this email sequence and it will email them. And if they don't perform that action, it will email them again. And it will keep emailing them until it either runs out of emails to send or the person does that. And then you can have them pulled out of the email sequence, put into a different one. Integrates with Zapier. People use it for integrating into a variety of tools like Asana and Streak and various CRMs to help them move people through so that they don't have to do it manually. Because otherwise you have to copy from spreadsheets and things like that. And it's a pain in the neck to keep track of how many emails you've sent to each person and how far down in the email sequence they are.
How did it come to where it is today? So were you on the toilet and you're like, hey, I really am tired of doing follow-ups and I need to go build software because I'm a smart developer? And how long did it take? I'm curious more of where that, like, the problem and then the creation came from.
Sure. So you were actually one of the first speakers at MicroConf back in 2011.
yeah. I thought you were going to say I was one of the first speakers to never be invited back, which that is true. I'm still waiting for my invite.
The hot sauce incident, I think that's what did it. I mean, there was hot sauce like 12 feet up on the wall. So anyway.
The infamous incident that will not be talked about.
Well, there was a no hot sauce rule, enacted after that. But disregarding that, when Rob and I are running MicroConf, he typically handles a lot of the speaker side of things, and I handle the sponsor side of things. And what I found was that when I was emailing sponsors to see if they were interested in coming into sponsor MicroConf, what would happen is I would send somebody an email, and they wouldn't respond, and I would have to send them another one, and possibly two or three more. And at some point along the way, they would reply. But usually sometimes they were warm contacts, sometimes they were cold contacts. And in most cases, because my email fell much lower on their priority list, they didn't necessarily see it as, kind of necessary to respond right away. And of course, there's good intentions there, like, oh, yeah, I'll get to this. And this is interesting. I don't have time right now because everything else gets in the way. So I would find myself emailing them 2-3 times, 4 times over the course of a week or two or 3 weeks, something like that. And I found myself saying the exact same things to them over and over. And so I had the idea that, hey, there could be a piece of software out there that would do this for me, because I know exactly what the second, third, and fourth emails are going to be. That first one, I usually customize it. So BlueTick allows you to do exactly that. But those follow-up emails are all heavily driven from a template. They're pretty much automatic. And it's really just to kind of get a response from somebody and help move the conversation forward.
And then, so you had the idea, you've had these problems with these guys, and I'm just curious, this is things I'm thinking about. And then how did you go from that to saying, all right, I'm going to build software around that?
So I was still, I started doing a little bit of validation around it. And my thought was, oh, I could sell this to other conference planners and event planners. And what I did was I looked into it, tried to figure out what a pricing model would look like, and realized that unless you ran a lot of conferences on a very regular basis, then you probably wouldn't use this software, just because the pricing model didn't really work out in terms of finances for me. So like if I charged a couple $100, it's a little bit of a tougher sell than if I were to charge $50 a month for it. But if I'm only charging $50 a month, how many times are they actually going to pay me? It's maybe 2 or 3, because they're, you know, doing sponsorships for a couple of months leading up to the conference, and then they don't need it for the rest of the year. So I tried doing the validation for a while, and I said, look, this just isn't going to go anywhere. And then fast forward a few years, I kind of came back to it and said, well, there's actually a lot of other situations that this applies to. So following up in like a consulting services company where they've got a proposal out to somebody, or they're just trying to get the conversation started, or they're just trying to find the right person to talk to. Those are all situations where this type of tool applies. But initially, I was kind of looking at the wrong type of buyer for it. So right solution, wrong target person.
Who are you hitting up originally?
So when I was first trying to figure out who to go after, I was looking at event planners and conference coordinators, because I kind of knew what that looked like. Right now, what I'm looking more at is like services companies, anyone who has kind of a price point that's probably above $2,000, but less than $10,000. So it's well worth your time and effort to follow up with those people. But a lot of people don't, just because they either feel bad or they don't want to go through that emotional hassle of sending that second, third, or fourth email. But I mean, I've got lots of data that shows me if you send that first email, yes, you may get a, you know, 30%, 40% response rate. But if you send 4 or 5, your response rate can increase dramatically to like 70 or 80%.
That is really interesting. I've found the same thing. I've used a similar tool. And what was shocking for me is 50% of my replies to people came on the second email. And it was like, oh, wow. And it's one of these things where most people, I'm sure, Mike, you get a bunch of emails, and a lot of people get a bunch of emails. And then you delete them. And if it's really important, people will follow up. Because if it's something that's important, but the data actually, you know, really shows that. So did you go and just build this right away, or did you sell a bunch of them and like get customers before you made it? Like, how did that go?
Yeah. So what I did was I created like this little explainer video. It was about a minute and a half long, and I sent it to a handful of people in my network who I thought would have this particular problem, and asked them, hey, is this a problem that you have? And if so, are you willing to talk to me about it? Because I think I have a solution that would solve it. So I got probably about a dozen conversations out of that fairly quickly, out of about 20 to 30 people that I sent it to. Had those conversations, and then over the course of, and really like that was just kind of the initial discussion, and then I would ask them, is this something that you would pay for? Most of them said yes, and once I got to the point where I had 12 people who said yes, I would pay for this, then I sat down and I created balsamic mock-ups of what the application was going to look like, how it was going to work. And then I went back to those people a month later and said, this is what it will be. What do you think? And then kind of walked them through everything, gave them a quote-unquote demo of the products using those mock-ups. And then I asked them for a credit card and asked them for a prepayment. And people gave me anywhere between a 1 month and 3 month prepayment. I let them choose how much they were going to pay, which helped me figure out what the price point was going to be and if that was going to make sense for me. Like if it was going to be $5 a month, I didn't want to do it. But if it was like 50 or 100, then that's reasonable. And after going through that, I ended up with about 15 or so people that gave me prepayments anywhere between 1 and 3 months, and anywhere between, I think, around $40 and $100. So I ended up with close to $2,000 worth of prepayments.
Dude, go you.
Thanks.
That is awesome. Well, I think most people do it backwards. Build, build, build. Hopefully someone comes. You are like, let's see if people buy. I think one thing that's, I think, a good thing for your audience to think about, and it's a good reminder for myself, is that you had people already that you could reach out to. So either you had a mailing list, or you had some audience, or you had some type of network. And I think most people do that way too late. One of my favorite examples, like, you know, silly examples is like, you know, people want to eat vegetables. So they go and they're like, well, I got to have a garden. And they dig a hole, plant a seed, and then they try to eat the seed the next day. And I'm like, okay, obviously, you know, you have to water it and wait and, you know, nurture it. And I think you did a really interesting job where you're like, all right, you've been doing this over years, so it made it easier for you to go, you know, validate this type of business idea. So for people out there, it's like, go start a mailing list, go start a website, go start joining Facebook groups, or go to conferences like MicroConf or whatever that is. It's just a really good thing. One thing I'm curious is, who are the people that prepaid? Because I think that's amazing. And then what were they really excited about?
Most of them were, as I said, services companies who they wanted to get somebody into their sales pipeline or wanted to get somebody to a meeting so that they could have a call and talk to them. And the issue that they had was that they would send somebody an email and say, hey, can we hop on a call? And the person wouldn't respond, or they'd send them a link to their Calendly or, you know, youcanbook.me or whatever that they were using. And, you know, they'd suggest a couple of times and the person wouldn't do it. So then they would have to go back and follow up with them. And I built Bluetick in such a way that you can send them that link and it will send and inject data into the query string for that. So then when they click on it, they schedule the time, it closes the loop so that you don't have to go back and pull the person out of the email sequence. It's all done automatically for you. And it tracks that on the back end. So you can check, like, what is your conversion rates and things like that on those emails that you sent, which one was the most effective. And it really just helps automate that whole process so that you don't have to do anything beyond that first email. It's like you just kind of set it. And by the time the person gets to that end of that sequence, you know, either the email has done its job or it hasn't.
And then so you sold $2,000 worth to people. Most of them wanted it for sales. What did you do next?
So after that,
I feel like this is like, and then what? Yeah. Next.
And then, so after that, I sat down and hired a couple of developers to help me build it, spent about 4 months or so doing that. And then probably 2 or 3 months after that, trying to work through very early issues with customers, trying to figure out, like, is this going to work for you? How does it work in your business? And just trying to get them to use it. And I ended up taking my entire development team that I'd hired, fired them all because everything behind it was really just not very good. Spent about 6 months kind of re-architecting a bunch of things. And then at that point, probably around November of this past year, that's when I added my first customer who started paying on a monthly basis. And then since then, I've been adding customers over the course of the past, you know, 6-7 months or so. And right now it's sitting at about somewhere between around 20 to 25 active customers. And it's at around $1,100 to $1,200 MRR.
Okay, hold on, dude, that was crazy. So what happened? You're working with these guys or girls, and then you fire them after 4 months?
Basically. So it was a team of three people, and they didn't know each other. So it was just three independent contractors. And I try to position it to them like, hey, one of you needs to kind of take the lead and step up and do like this particular role and manage stuff. And none of them really wanted to do it because it was all off of Upwork. They'd never worked together before. So in terms of management, I was trying to hand that off to them so that I could focus on customer stuff, but it kind of fell apart. And I blame myself for it because I didn't necessarily give them as much guidance in terms of the design and engineering up front as I probably needed to. And my expectations were probably too high for them.
So how would you do that differently? Because it's funny you say that. I was in the past 6 months as I've been doing more personal stuff, I was building some recruiting software, and I used actually this Pakistani outsource team that helped me build AppSumo 7 years ago. And man, it was a freaking struggle. Like, all right, cool, we'll do those features. And they come back to with the features. And I'm like, this is not even close to what I exactly told you guys to do. And I showed you what to do. And, you know, I'm curious, like, how would you better communicate, or is it better hire a better team, or how would you do that next time you build something?
I think that the design itself really needs to have, I'd say, more details or more screencasts or walkthroughs with me explaining things. You know, one of the things that I did was I would give them like a document that says, hey, this is what it's supposed to do. But it's really dry and boring to look at those things. And even if you have things on the screen, it doesn't necessarily lend itself to everybody on the team doing things in the same way. Because if you have three different people who are tasked with building three different areas of the application, you still need somebody to kind of coordinate between them to help understand, okay, this is the style we're going to use. This is how we're going to do paging and sorting and things like that. Like, there's a lot of back-end stuff that was just an absolute mess. So it was implemented completely differently from one page to the next. So from the end user standpoint, like, the app barely worked. And it was because of all those issues. And there wasn't enough focus, I'd say, on letting them know about areas where they really need to be concerned about, which were things like, okay, you can't just assume that you're going to get 10 records here. You might get hundreds or thousands of records, or even hundreds of thousands. So there were places in the app where it just wasn't scalable in any way, shape, or form, and it would fall apart once you started kind of using it. And that's what a lot of the re-engineering effort was focused on.
That's actually interesting. So how much did that cost you to begin with, and then how long did it take once you took it back over to just finish it?
Let's see here. I'd have to go back and look, but I don't think it was more than probably $15,000 or so to have them work on it for between the 3 and 6 months that they worked on it, because most of them were working on it part-time. I don't think it was more than about $15,000.
And then how much was the new version?
So for the re-engineered version, I did all that work myself, but it took like 6 months to do it.
Damn. So, I mean, if you could go back, it sounds like 10 months plus some of the validation, so a year, give or take. You know, what do you think would have been an alternative to get it out sooner? Or like, if you had to start this all over tomorrow, what would you do?
What would I do? I'd probably stub out certain parts of the code base myself, so that it's clear how to do certain things or clear how to manage certain types of problems. So there's typical things that you would do in an app, like, you know, security controls and team accounts and things like that. And you really need to have those types of designs engineered up front, because if you don't, then you have to figure out what to do with them later. But there's also that trade-off that you have to think about. Are you going to over-engineer up front to make sure that you get it right, or are you just going to slap something together and put it out there and see if it works and if it resonates with people, and then redo it afterwards so that, you know, you don't figure out later on if you're making a mistake? I think it depends a lot on how much money you have to spend on it and how much time versus like how quickly do you want to get to market and make the mistakes. And, you know, are you okay with prototyping certain parts of your app, for example? Are you okay with prototyping the whole thing and throwing it away once you've validated that the idea is going to fly? I think it depends on kind of where in that spectrum you fall.
Where do you think most people make mistakes around that?
I'd say that people spend probably too much time building the app as opposed to putting it in front of people. So I had something that was barely functional in front of people in about 4 months. And I realized early on, like, where the problems were, why they weren't using it, and what sorts of issues that they were running into that made them not want to use it. So that was helpful in that I got there quick, but at the same time, like, those types of problems took a long time to solve, partially because I wasn't familiar with some of the technologies. So like using a stack that I was probably more familiar with would have been a little bit better, but I can't really do anything about it at this point.
You know, one thing that I'm considering, and then we can get into the marketing plan about how to scale this out, because I actually use a competitor tool, and we can talk about that as well. And if you couldn't have built any software, because you're an engineer, so you're obviously very smart, and I'm not patronizing, seriously, engineers are smarter than everyone else. If you couldn't build a software, how would you have done the software? How would you have just done the service without the software? Yeah, because I think what people miss a lot of the time, they're like, oh, software as a service. They're like, it's just a SaaS recurring revenue. They don't realize like SaaS means you're doing a software that's replacing a service. And I think that's really critical that people just jump to the software. I'm like, well, do the service a few times. And most businesses, you could actually implement ghetto versions of it to see if it's something valuable for people before you go out and build software.
Yeah, I think for this, you probably to figure out whether or not that was an idea that would fly, like in terms of just the validation piece of it, to see if the process itself works. If you didn't know that the process worked, then you could probably just like create your own email account or ask somebody, hey, can you create a mailbox on your domain? I will send the emails for you. And when people get replies, then I will kind of shoot it over to you and let you take over the conversation. You could do that. That would probably be the easiest way.
Dude, that's a great idea. That is a great idea.
If you don't know how to code, if you don't know how to do anything like that, like you basically have to say, how can I insert myself in here to do what a computer would do?
Dude, I love it. I think that I'm just going to repeat it because it's so good. You're like, hey, just give me access to your inbox or give me a separate account. Give me the people you want, the emails you want to, and like, I'll even write the emails and you do it for them. And then they're like, oh shit, this is working. And then you could actually go build software.
Yep. So I think that would work if you didn't know anything about it or if you weren't technical. I think in my case, I had done some of that early validation because I was doing this exact same process for MicroConf sponsors. And I basically just took that process and implemented it as a piece of software. So I think it depends on the type of problem that you're solving, whether or not that specific solution would work. But I don't see any reason why, if you're going to build software that solves problem X, you can't just do it manually until you can program the computer to do it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And so you finally got it built 6 months later because you took over, you did it yourself. I'm curious, for the people who aren't maybe technical, I guess a lot of MicroConf and your listeners are, but for the non-technical, how would they find someone to build it? Let's say they validated it. And like, where would you go?
So I started out with Upwork. I think that they combined with, this is like freelancer.com or something like that. I forget what the other one was. And then there's also WeWork Remotely. The issue you find, though, is that the better developers, you have to pay more money. So if you're operating as a bootstrap business or running it on the side, then you have this constant challenge or balance that you're trying to strike between paying somebody to develop something versus either doing stuff yourself or paying somebody who is a lower cost so that you're not burning through your runway as quickly.
It's cool. All right. So any of those different types of services, even do you think, does Fiverr have any development?
I don't know. I've never looked on there. Maybe they do, but my guess is that it's probably like very certain problems.
Oh, that's fair. So you finally build it and you give it to these people. What do they say? Because they've been waiting for it.
Depends on where you are in the timeline. So after like the 4 to 5 month mark, because you know, if I kind of count from January of 2016, because that's when like I broke ground on code. And then in, it was April or May, it was when around when MicroConf was. And right after that, I came back and I started putting it in front of people. And it really just wasn't ready. And I had a hard time getting people to use it. I'd create accounts for them and they just really wouldn't use it. So I spent several months trying to figure out why it was that people weren't using it. What was it not doing for them? And there were just a ton of issues. Issues here and there, basically throughout the entire app. So a lot of it just needed to be re-architected. So it took me kind of 6 months to kind of get it to the point where I was getting people to start using it and realized, okay, now this is at a point where I could actually sell it to people. So I actually took somebody from outside of that core group of people and said, if you want access to the software, you're going to get charged on day one. I was still trying to onboard those people, but I had kind of given them carte blanche access to use the software or not. And until they were getting value out of it, that's when I would start charging them. So there wasn't any real impetus for them to start using it because it was obviously like putting something on their task list because then they have to start using it. But then if they start getting the value out of it, then I would start charging them. So I didn't really draw the line in the sand for them until probably 4 or 5 months ago.
Interesting. And then, so now you finally got it out. You finally got most of the bugs fixed. And let's jump to the marketing thing. Let's get to the meaty stuff where a lot of people say like, hey, how do I get more people to find my product and buy my product and grow my business? I think the missing part sometimes is, do you have something people actually want? Do you ever wonder about that or think about like, is this something actually people wanted?
For this product, no. I think it's an interesting question the way you phrased it, because I don't think that most people, when they're building something, even question whether or not people want it. I don't think that they do. Like, I don't think I've ever questioned anything that I've ever built and said, do people actually want this? Like, you don't know that or even really consider it until after you put it out there and then people don't buy it. And you're like, oh, do people really want this? Because like, you're not going to build something that you don't think people want.
Yeah, we think that. We're like, no, I don't think anyone tries to be like, yeah, I can't wait to like build stuff that no one's ever going to use. You know what I mean? Like, I generally don't think that's the case.
Exactly. I mean, and that could just be self-delusion too. So it's not to say that that's not a possibility. It just means that, no, I never really seriously thought that. And I still don't. But it doesn't mean it's not a fair question. Like, objectively, do people care?
And so what was your plan to get it out there? So this is where we can start going through kind of some of the marketing plan stuff that we went over in your document.
So there's kind of like different stages that I would say that the app needs to get to. So like there's the early adopters or, you know, I'll say alpha users or beta users, whatever you want to call them. Like, that group of people needed to get onboarded and start being successful with it. And then there's like this level where I feel like it needed to start get into like a critical mass of like 20 or 30 people before I could go public with it and start pushing it out to larger numbers of people. And that's kind of where it is today. Most of the people who are on there now have either been using it for several months or were part of the very early access group or just heard about it through word of mouth. I've actually gotten a lot of referrals from people who have been using the software and then recommended it to somebody else and said, oh, you're having problems with X. I was too. And then I switched over to Bluetick and those particular problems went away. So I found a lot of success in asking specific people for referrals and getting into other people's networks and leveraging those networks to add more people into Bluetick.
Okay, so referrals. And then did you pick a goal? Did you pick a customer? How did you organize it at a high level?
You know, like with the referrals, a lot of them were to people that I didn't know. So it wasn't as if I necessarily had a particular goal in mind. It was just, you know, who do you know that has this particular type of problem? And then is Bluetick a good fit for solving that problem for them? So most of it boiled down to like doing a demo for them, talking to them about their problem, seeing if there were ways to re-engineer the software a little bit to fit that particular use case. And I found a couple of use cases that people have kind of kind of hit on. So one is like podcasters who want to get sponsors for their podcast. And that's, and it's funny that that has kind of come up because several years ago when I was first doing the early validation, I was looking at event coordinators and conferences and they just didn't happen often enough. But podcasters record like every week or every other week. So there's a much higher frequency and they could actually use the software to do exactly what it was originally going to be for event coordinators.
So a few of the things, it seems like one kind of challenge you're still figuring out is like, who is the ideal target customer?
Yep, that's absolutely true.
Because, you know, for me, I use, I use outreach.io, there's Mixmax, there's Boomerang, there's followup.cc. There's a good amount of different people doing this. And I think what happens with, and including with sumo.com and even appsumo.com, there's always competitors. I've never seen a business where there's not competitors. Like even people like Tesla. Yeah, there's a bunch of other car companies. And guess what? There's public transportation and then there's biking and Uber. And sometimes your biggest competitors you don't even realize. So I guess the thing for you is, and people out there is just not to get discouraged. That's also advice for myself is that there's always some competitors. So I think that what I'm curious for you is who do you think your customer will end up being? Like, is it for SMBs that are small sales team? Is it the podcast marketing tool? Because I do think with like outreach and some of these guys, you know, they're literally, I think we're paying $500 a month or per person or something pretty crazy. And you can't just sign up for it. And you've got to go, you know, you have to have a demo and all this other stuff.
Yeah. So I have talked to people who've been using outreach or switched away from outreach. And one of their biggest complaints was the fact that it costs so much per license. I talked to somebody a few weeks ago and they'd said that they were quoted $150 or $160 a month per person. Bluetick is only $50 a month per person. And it does largely the same types of things. And, you know, like I've heard some from people who have used various competitors that they had problems with them. And so what I did early on when I was doing the validation was I focused in on those problems and said, how can I avoid Bluetick having any of those problems? So I worked really hard on the engineering side of things to make sure that those things don't happen. So for example, being able to add somebody into more than one email sequence at a time and recognize when they're in one versus the other and pull them out of the correct one, for example. Another one is being able to make sure that the emails are not being missed. So if a reply comes in, how do you guarantee that the software does not miss a reply? And I do that by synchronizing the entire mailbox, which I don't know of anyone else who does that, but it's basically brute forcing to make absolutely sure that that does not happen. And there's a few other little things here and there, but those are kind of the main pieces that I focused on because the people I talked to were generally unhappy with other options. So in many ways, I feel like I won't say like the target market is this, but I feel like a good chunk of my early customers are probably going to come from people who are fed up with other products and are looking for a solution because of specific things that they've run into.
I guess one thing that I'd be curious, and we can go about how I like to think about marketing plans and some of the things I'd recommend for you to do. How do you know which customer you're going to finally be like, let me hone in on this customer and this pricing?
That's a good question. I don't know what that looks like right now. That's something I'm still trying to work out. I've shied away from honing in specifically on like one particular use case or one particular type of customer so far because I don't feel like I have enough customers who fit a given profile yet to be able to say, oh, I'm going to go in this direction. And my concern is really that the tool gets pegged for, you know, like podcasters and getting sponsors for podcasters, for example. I don't want the tool to be pigeonholed into something like that too early. I don't know what the best customer looks like. And maybe that's not even a valid concern. Maybe I shouldn't be worried about that.
I think you should. And I think that's where you're going to win. And winning means just making the business a lot easier. So what I've been kind of thinking about a lot in the past few weeks is I call it PPD. Who's my person? What's the price for them? And what's my differentiator? And your PPD, or I guess PDP or whatever kind of way you want to organize it for yourself is that, and this is something that when I was doing marketing at Mint was probably one of the reasons that we did well. It's not, obviously it was not just me. There's a bunch of people that made Mint. But what we did is we targeted people who read personal finance blogs and it was free. I mean, so your price is zero, which is good. And then differentiator was it was free and the people was very exact. It was like, if you're reading a personal finance blog, I want you. If you're not reading personal finance blogs, I don't care. And the more that you can do that and even commit to it for 3 months, because I think what I've noticed with marketing is that people don't want to be very narrow because they're going to lose out on customers. Like an example of that was yesterday, I was talking to my friend who helps me with design work. And he said, hey, you know, the most lucrative customers are my web app and mobile app designs. but I get all these other businesses and, you know, I want money and I'm not making a bunch. So what do I do? And because it's hard to say no to that. And I said, well, great. The more you're saying no, the more it means you're focused and you have the right customer, but find someone else that you could pass them off to and say, hey, this is a great person for all these other things you want. I'm this. And because in reality, he can get better at that skill and he can start charging more. So if you had to today, Mike, I'm curious, if you could only serve one person and you said for the next month, let's just keep it really short, what next month, I'm only going to focus on this person. Who do you think that would be?
I would probably say the owner of a services company that has less than 10 people in it. And by 10 people, I would say 10 people total, but probably two or three that are essentially charged with doing the outreach efforts and marketing and sales for that business to help them build the business and build the relationships that they need with their customers.
Okay, now let's go with that. Now we got something. I'm excited. So we're doing service people who need more customers, right? So like web design agencies, or is there any, like, what's an example of that?
So like software development, web design, you know, you could go so far as print design, anyone where there's like a service-based component where you typically have to talk to the customer in some way, shape, or form before you can really start working on them. And because of that, like you end up with people who, or you end up with a type of business where you have multiple people involved in the creative process, because you've got like a sales rep or marketing person on the front end, and they're really doing like business development. And then they hand off the business or the work to be done to somebody else. And then that person does it, but they're the ones getting compensated, or the money is being generated for that consulting company based on their work. It's not really that salesperson up front. So the price points for them tend to be higher. I mean, it may be a couple $1,000s, maybe $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 a week, but it's worth it for them to follow up with their customers. And that's really the key point that I found, is that the price point that they're selling at has to be high enough for them to justify doing those outreach efforts. Because, you know, we've talked about this earlier, the second, third, fourth emails, those are the ones that you also see a fairly high response rate. And if you can get to the point where you have a business that if a lead is worth $4,000 or $5,000, you only send them one email or two emails, it's probably not enough. You need to get to the point where you get an answer. Like, you don't want to send an email into a black hole and just assume that they're not interested. You have to follow up until you get an answer one way or the other. Even if it's no, you don't care. You just want to know, that is that lead dead? Yes or no?
Okay, so you have that, and then what's next? So what's next for you with that? Because I think sometimes when people ask for advice, and this is why I tend to never give advice, is because we all have our own plans. Like, you already kind of have some plan that you already want to do. And so I think when people are giving advice, just try to understand what people's plans already are and see if you can assist that. That's why I ask that before I just say, like, oh, go do all this stuff.
Yeah. So I think the biggest question in my mind is like, how do I get in front of those people? And it doesn't even necessarily need to be at scale either. It's how do I get in front of those people so that I can kind of capture enough of their attention and enough of their interest to get the conversation going when they don't know who I am, when they don't know what Bluetick is or what it can do for them. And maybe they're familiar with cold or warm emailing software and CRMs and sales funnels and things like that, but they aren't necessarily looking specifically for these types of tools.
I am curious, how come you're not targeting, because MicroConf has how many people on their mailing list, and you have so many on your mailing list. Like, how many people are on that mailing list?
I'd say between them, probably 8,000, 10,000, something like that.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, how come you didn't focus on serving those people or tailoring this more to them?
I would say that, I won't say that I haven't. So Bluetick is my business. And then there's also like the Micropreneur Academy, which under that umbrella, you have the podcast and MicroConf and Founder Cafe. And we don't really mix email lists. And I haven't really, I would say I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable like going out and trying to do like a sales blast or anything like that to them, just because like that's not what they were there for. It's not what they signed up for. It's different if I talk to somebody at MicroConf or they come up to me and ask me questions about Bluetick because they've heard about it and they're interested in it. I have no problems doing that, especially when like they're coming to me because they're like, oh yes, I know this person and, you know, I feel like I can trust them and they're going to do the right thing for me. That's not an issue. It's that going outbound to that audience, to those particular mailing lists, is not kosher, I guess, is the way I'd put it.
That's just one feedback. And then we can go through marketing plan. So we'll do a marketing plan in 15 minutes or less. It's like dominoes. I think most people with marketing, and this is something that I think why sometimes I think my marketing has done well, is that I do go to the people I already know first and I try to serve them first. And what I mean by that is, like, I don't know, and maybe you do, and I'm totally off base, but I don't know how many people you have that already are running like software development firms. And maybe it's a lot, but the easier thing you already have for sure is you have a bunch of people who already like you, who probably have businesses or know someone who have a business, that I would try to tap my close network first before I even try to think about my secondary or fourth, like, networks I have no clue of.
No, that's a good point. I just have to think of creative ways to do that.
I don't even think you have to be creative, dude. Not to be mean about it, but I think those people already like you. They probably hate, I don't know if they hate me or like me, but for sure they like you. And you don't even have to sell them. Be like, hey guys, like, this is something I'm launching. You guys are launching things. I'd love to get anybody's feedback on it. Or if you guys want to use it, feel free. You can hook them up if you want. That's totally on your discretion. It's just like when I started AppSumo, I started a business for startups because I love startup software. And I like promoting stuff. And I had a network of that. And I went out to my network on LinkedIn. I went out to all my friends and said, hey, can you tweet this? It just made it really easy because I try to help and serve the people that I already had access to versus ones I had no clue of.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So just something to consider. So when it's been really interesting talking about this. So here's just a few thoughts about it. What's your goal for the year with Bluetick?
So my goal with it by the end of the year, and I kind of classify November, the end of November is the end of the year, because December, I don't think the whole lot is going to get sold. But by the end of November, I'd like to hit 10K in MRR.
Okay, so that is key. And I think that's, I just want to highlight it for people out there. If you don't have a goal with a timeline, I just don't think you can be successful. It's like a boat. And someone said this quote I saw this morning. It's like a boat without a rudder. You're just kind of going randomly, and maybe you'll end up on America, maybe you'll end up in South America, who knows? So I love that you have a goal. And then to that goal, with that timeline, what's your plan now to hit the 10,000?
I have like a bunch of notes and stuff that I still feel like I need to organize a little bit better. You know, kind of like you said, the just going without a rudder. I have a lot of tactics and specific things that I could do kind of written out, probably have like a couple of hundred things, but I haven't really organized them to, you know, kind of like what your PPD, the person, price, and differentiator. Like, I haven't narrowed down to say, like, these are the people that I'm actually going to go for, and these are the tactics that I'm going to slot in to actually do that. I have some ideas that have kind of worked in the past few months. So one of them is like doing influencer outreach and doing going on podcasts and things like that. I've also thought about doing joint webinars. I've talked to a few different people who have fairly large audiences themselves and said that they'd be willing to talk about Bluetick and have me on podcasts and to talk about cold and warm email strategies, things like that. Those are the things that I would probably lean more towards right now, just because I'm more comfortable with them. But I think that there's also plenty of other things that I either haven't done before or I'm not comfortable with or just don't even know about or haven't thought about that I could do to increase traffic and add sales and customers.
All right. Do you mind if I give some suggestions of what I do?
Absolutely. That's what you're here for.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not telling people to do whatever you want, but here's how I would organize your marketing a little bit tighter. So number one, I think you should just pick a specific customer and then make your website very tailored to them. So when I go to bluetick.io, it's not very clear who it's for. It's like, hey, everyone should send cold and warm email follow-up software. And there's like feature-driven, demographic-driven, and then psychographic-driven types of headlines. And it's not speaking to anyone. So for me, like if I come to Bluetick, it should be, we help service companies make 2 times more money. Oh, what the hell? How the hell do you do that? And then that hooks me into what you do. You know, and you know, this is getting there. We send follow-up emails so you don't have to, but what does a follow-up email actually mean? So if you're talking to your specific audience, it's like, hey, let's say you target podcasters just to get guests. It's like, we help 2 times more you book your guests, or don't waste so much time booking guests. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a podcaster. I waste a bunch of time. That's really painful. So I think your marketing, the way that I would do it is that think about who your customer is and just, this is what I do, either use live chat or just talk to them and ask them how they describe your business. And use a recorder, record it, maybe interview them for the podcast, like interview a customer, and take their language. Because if some, you know, I don't know how they talk to their friends, but the way they talk to their friends is the way you need to talk to them or their colleagues. So that would be number one. Number two, with your overall marketing plan, the way I like to do it is, I love your goal 10,000. You need to break that down monthly. So what does that mean for August? What does that mean for September, October, November, December? And from each month, you should have, all right, well, how much MRR do I need to be to get my 10,000 by the end of the year? And then within each month, I break out, all right, well, if I need to go from 1,000 to 3,000, I need 2,000 MRR. What are ways I can get that? And so what I like to do is list out 10 different ways that I make estimations about how much MRR I can think I can get from each activity. So for example, with sumo.com, we're trying to double the amount of customers we have in the next 6 months. And so I have a list of like 6 different things. It's content marketing, affiliate marketing, paid marketing, free tools, SEO kind of stuff. And I estimate, you know, based on some historicals and based on just guesses, I'm like how much I think each one is going to happen. And I sort it. And then I pick generally just 3 because I don't think we can do that many things great. And I execute on just those 3 for the month. And at the end of the month, I say, all right, what did it actually produce versus what I expected? And the beauty of that then is I can cut the one that doesn't work, keep one or maybe two that do work, and then add in another experiment, the 80-20 rule. And what that does is it forces some discipline on accountability and some, oh, wow, well, this is what it should do if I actually execute it correctly and help you hit your goal. Does that make sense?
Oh, that makes perfect sense. I mean, that's dead on accurate. I mean, that's fantastic, to be honest.
Yeah. So you just need to, and it's a basic spreadsheet. I don't use crazy software. It's totally free. Google spreadsheets or, you know, illegally download Excel, whatever you guys want to do, or maybe open source it. You know, even for you, I think a lot of people, you could even do one-on-one. A lot of times I do that in the beginning is just referral. So with sumo.com, when we started it, I just literally went out to people that I knew and, you know, some people, oh, you know about a bunch of people. So if you don't know a bunch of people, go join MicroConf, go get involved in things. If you don't know people before you need them and before you want to work with them. If you do have people, how can you go one by one and do that? So we literally went through every single person on my LinkedIn account. You know, and I've been doing internet stuff for like 15 years, so it took me a long time. But it was like at the end of it, I was like, oh, wow, we have a good amount of people using us now and paying us. So I wouldn't want to, you know, it's one of your tactics. I wouldn't want to discount, you know, even direct selling one by one and say, well, I think I could probably generate $500 from that. And then you do it. At the end of the month, you're like, well, I did 300 and it was pretty damn good versus other things. I'll do more of that next month and then less of something else.
I mean, to that point, I could like export all my contacts in LinkedIn and just look through them, see who I think would be a good fit or should just be filtered out entirely, and then throw them into Bluetick and just do that personal outreach. I could do that. There's nothing preventing me, I don't think.
I think that's even more genius. That use your own product, like use your own dog food. I think that's epic, man.
I actually use that for like during the course of demos. So like previously up until this week, I had just a little field on the website where you could ask for invitation code and then they go to the next page. They fill out a survey and anyone who filled out a survey, I'd look at what they said and then plug them into Bluetick and then use Bluetick to get them to a demo. And then during the demo, I would show them, hey, this is how Bluetick got you to this demo. And it was, I mean, it worked really, really well. We got an 80% response rate.
Dude, that's genius. I love that. So one thing that I'm changing, this is a new kind of method that I've been using with my marketing, and I'm starting to apply it in other parts of business, but it's called proactive dashboards. And the idea there, Mike, and for people listening, is that you create a dashboard for yourself and your team of things you can do on a weekly basis that is fully controllable by you. So what do I mean by that? Mike, can you control if someone responds to your email or not?
Not directly, no.
No, you can't force me to reply to your email. You can be like, no, do it. I'll kill you. I'm like, nah, whatever. Mike, you're not coming to Austin.
300 of them.
Yeah, and then I'll just filter your emails or whatever it is.
I know.
But point being is you can't control it, but can you control how many emails you send?
Yeah, absolutely.
Completely. Completely. So I create proactive dashboards for my podcast, the Noah Kagan Presents one that we were talking about earlier. And then for sumo.com, we have a proactive dashboard. And for each of these teams, it's things that we can control that help us hit our goal. So let's say your goal is this MRR goal and you have a person doing sales for you or for yourself. It's like, well, can I send 10 emails a week? And that's controllable by you. And so each week we do a green or red, whether we hit our goal. And then you can have other things. How much ad spend? Maybe I want to spend, did you spend $50 in ads? Or one of the guys on our team, it's like, hey, did you run 2 marketing experiments this week? And I don't really care which things they actually do. I just care that they do it or not do it. And because I want them to, you know, take initiative and all that other good stuff. But the point of the proactive dashboard is that it's kind of this living, controllable dashboard that'll help you hit your goals and you can adjust it as needed, meaning that you'll probably be doing stuff like we were doing a bunch of Pinterest for a while for OK Dork and the podcast, and it was just doing nothing. So after a month, it was said, all right, kill Pinterest. What's working better? Quora. Okay, let's increase our Quora. And we did, and we saw Quora go up. And this week we're experimenting with LinkedIn. I'm seeing a lot more LinkedIn traffic and engagement. So we're experimenting with one post on LinkedIn a week. And so basically I encourage everyone to think about, all right, what are controllable things I can be accountable for or make my team accountable for on a weekly basis that'll help me hit my goals?
That's awesome. So I guess in terms of like psychology, what does that do for you? Because obviously like you do have control over these things, but is that why this works? Is it like a psychological hack that doesn't put you, you know, in a position where you just kind of freeze because you're not sure what to do?
Dude, I've gone to a bunch of therapy. I don't act like I know everything. I think why I like this and why the teams like it is a few different reasons. One, you want to play games you can win. So if you're doing things and your end vanity metrics aren't working, it's very demoralizing. But this is something where like I can control it completely. And I learned this from my friend Dave at grasshopper.com. And one, it's controllable. So you feel like you can actually win. Two, a lot of us like to see that we have streaks. So the green and red every week, and you start seeing you have green, you're like, okay, cool, I'm doing well, I'm getting my stickers. And three, I do think the fact that you make it, I don't know if this is as much with the psychology of it, but the fact that you adjust it. So for example, these marketing tests, if we were doing marketing tests and it never helped to our goal, we would just cancel it. And so I think it just kind of makes you a little bit more short term, like, all right, am I doing the activities that I can control that are helping me move to where I want to be? So far it's been really great, and I'm starting to implement it, and I'm looking forward to it. Like with the Sumo team, like the webinar guy, it's like, hey, you have to make one video, YouTube video a week. And it's like, he'll start doing it, and it's like, holy crap, that's actually really driving traffic and customers. All right, now you got two. And then maybe it's like, you have to do a collaboration every other week. So did you do that or not? So things you can, well, that's a little less control, but did you email five people to collaborate with? That's controllable. And I think it's more ultimately, it's like, all right, I have power to choose in this. And I think with certain other times, you're kind of like, you feel like you're at the mercy of hoping things work out, when I don't really believe in hope. I believe in making sure things work.
Yeah, I think I have a blog post or a conference talk someplace called Hope is Not a Strategy. I think I completely ripped that off from Scott Adams of Dilbert.
Yeah, I mean, I think with marketing, that's why I always tell people to spreadsheet it. You know, I call it quant-based marketing, and I've written a bunch about it on OK Dork. And the idea is, like, if you need to hit 10,000, map out all the ways you think you'll get to 10,000, execute on it, see if it's which ones are right, which ones are wrong, and then keep iterating on it. And versus like, well, I want to be 10,000, I'll just do a bunch of random shit and hopefully it gets there. I don't think if you were trying to travel somewhere, you would just say, all right, well, I hope, let's just get on a plane and hope it lands where I want to go.
Yeah, I can't imagine that works out for most people.
It doesn't. And you know, a lot of the time you're going to try things. Some of it's going to work. Some of it's not going to work. The point is that it for sure in business, things aren't going to work. That's a guarantee. But knowing that things aren't going to work, it's great. But you have to say, oh, well, now that I know that, what things are working so I can do more of them?
Yeah, I think your point earlier about playing games that you know that you can win, I think that's probably the killer insight that really needs to be a high-level takeaway from all of this.
I think that's great, man. Well, so it sounds like overall for your marketing, one, you already got customers and you got revenue, which is further ahead than most other people, which is amazing. But I would just put a little bit more organization around the PPD. So who's the person? What's the price? What's your differentiator? Because there are options out there. So who's your exact person? And then in your marketing plan, I think it's just like, hey, here's my plan for laid out for the year. Here's my things for this month. Let me go execute on them. Let me have my weekly dashboard. Even for yourself, it's helpful. And then you start iterating from that. And then you'll be like, holy crap, I hit 10,000 sooner than I thought.
Awesome. That's fantastic advice. So so I know that you've got to get going here soon. Where could people find you if they want to follow up with you?
Yeah. If you're interested in my personal stuff, Noah Kagan Presents Podcast or okdork.com. I mean, I talk about business stuff that I'm learning from our business, which is sumo.com, which is tools to grow your email list. And we also have the app sumo.com, which is Groupon for Geeks. So any of that, you can find me. I'm pretty darn accessible. If you can't find me online, I don't know. Something's wrong.
You're not looking hard enough, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't get enough attention in high school, so I'm desperate for it now or something like that. I hope we get invited back to MicroConf one day if I can earn that right. And there will be no sriracha, or I might just bring one bottle.
All right. Well, you take it easy. Thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And if you as a listener have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsforthestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups, and visit startupsforthestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.